Welcome, everyone. I'm Jim Kelly, Chair of the Board of Forestry. Welcome to the September 8th, 2021 Board of Forestry virtual meeting. We are live streaming this meeting on YouTube, and to make sure our viewers online can follow along with today's meeting, I'll go over some housekeeping tips to keep us on track. Everyone participating or presenting, please silence cell phones and limit background noises. Remember to use the mute feature when you are not speaking and disable your video when not presenting or part of the discussion. For the record, we ask all presenters, public members, and board members to state their name for those listening online. If you experience any technical issues, use the chat function on Zoom to connect with the ODF support team in Salem during the meeting. For those joining us online, I'll remind everyone of our general order of operations. After an item is introduced, and I'll invite the presenters to begin. For board members, if you have clarifying questions, please use the raise hand function and I will call on you. Presenters, we will do our best to ask questions one at a time. After a presentation, we will open up the floor for board discussion and additional questions. We will continue to offer real-time public testimony under item one, where the public can comment on items on and off the agenda. At the end of the board members' initial comments, we will begin the public comment period and commenters will have 3 minutes to provide testimony. The public will also be able to provide testimony today during the pre-decision workshop scheduled this afternoon on the draft climate change and carbon plan. For the board, this is an opportunity to be informed of the plan's progress and find alignment and agreement on how this plan sets a roadmap for the board and agency. Additionally, members of the public, we ask that if you would like to submit written testimony for this meeting's agenda items and enter it into the record, please send in your comments by September 22nd. This will help in the preparation of our board's meeting minutes. Please note, pursuant to ORS 192.660, (2)(h), the board will meet in closed executive session today starting at 11:30 a.m. The purpose of the session will be to confer with legal counsel on current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. Representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. This session is otherwise closed to the public. We will take a break before the virtual executive session begins and recommence the public meeting for the workshop at 1 p.m. Any questions? Also, I'd just like to encourage everyone today, as always, to limit your use of acronyms. We have a lot of folks that are involved in this meeting today, and not all of them are as familiar with the long list of acronyms common within the ODF organization. So ask you for your patience on that. Any questions? If none, I will perform a roll call to confirm a quorum can be met for today's items. Carla Chambers.
Here.
Ben Däumling.
Here.
Chandra Ferrari.
Here.
Joe Justice.
Here.
Brenda McComb.
Here.
And I as well am here. All right, great. Moving on to the consent agenda items. And on that point, the item A, the minutes, are not yet ready, so I'd like to remove that from the consent agenda and remind people that there are recordings available on the website of those meetings, and of course we will be approving those minutes at a later meeting. And with that, are there any questions about the consent agenda?
Chair Kelly, this is Board Member McComb. I will vote to approve the consent agenda, but I do want to raise the issue of committee appointments and have asked Josh, to look into ways in which we can ensure that the committee appointments in the future have a diversity of representation of identities and philosophies.
Got it. Great. Any other comments? If not, then I would ask for a motion and a second.
Mr. Chair, this is Joe Justice. I move to approve the consent agenda, excluding the minutes.
Second, this is McComb.
Great. In that case, I will call a roll again. Carla Chambers?
Aye.
Ben Doimling?
Aye.
Chandra Ferrari?
Aye.
Joe Justice?
Aye.
Brenda McComb?
Aye.
And myself, I also vote aye. So with consensus by the board, the motion carries. So we will now move on to item number one, acting state forester, board member, and public comments. Nancy, are you with us? And would you like to start us off today?
Good morning, Chair Kelly, members of the board. I'm here. Probably need to do a sound check.
We can hear you.
All right. Well, here we are, back to virtual. Good morning. My comments today are going to take a moment to reflect on this day and provide some positive random news that will be fun to share. I want to assure you we remain focused on the board and the department's top priorities. While we are implementing the latest governor's office executive order on vaccination requirements. A year ago, many department employees were continuing work from overnight into the new day to put out fires where they could safely, and more importantly, they were working with partner agencies, landowners, and volunteers towards providing public safety in communities, towns, and for families. Most every Oregonian has been impacted in some way from the September 2020 Labor Day fires that resulted in devastating loss and costs. The response to this catastrophic event deserves deep respect, appreciation, and honor. The healing of this event remains very real throughout most of our lives today. Today, I just want to simply say thank you to the department employees for their courageous leadership during the September 2020 Labor Day fires. So today, 1 year later, we've had a challenging fire season, and we are currently sitting in a very successful place. Fire risks still exist, and yet I'm pleased to report that due to especially great, excellent initial attack by our frontline firefighters, combined with incident management team's success of putting out large fires on ODF jurisdictions, that for the most part, our employees are back at their home districts, getting some well-deserved regular days off and getting a chance to spend time with their families. Their success relies on many others taking care of core business on the home front. Our business is not an either or, it's an and, both have to happen. Thanks to everyone in your role for the success to date. This success happened during a time that regionally and nationally, the competition for resources was at the highest level. I have a tremendous amount of appreciation for all of you, along with our partners, for all that's been accomplished this fire season to date. I want to touch on agency capacity and recruitments. Our human resources team has worked on 68 recruitments since June. This number doesn't include seasonals, and these recruitments are at different places in the process. This is a great number. Many of these recruitments have moved to the selection or offer stage. This is truly adding capacity to the important work that we must accomplish. On a different note, every employee serving right now does so with a tremendous amount of uncertainty. The vaccination requirements and deadlines have added a lot more uncertainty with more questions than answers. Even with this, the human resources team, along with our public affairs team, The leadership there have strived to address pages of questions employees have raised. I want to say thank you to those folks as well. I also want to provide an update on the draft memorandum of understanding between the Department of Forestry and Environmental Quality that will replace the 1998 MOU. Both agencies sent the draft MOU out for comments on September 1st, including to tribal representatives. Those emails were also provided to you for your information. This is an important topic, as the MOU relates to water quality standards, provides standards, particularly total maximum daily loads, which are also called TMDLs. This updated MOU focuses more on meeting TMDLs based on the Clean Water Act requirements and sets how ODF and DEQ will work together with their, within their respective authorities to complement each agency's work to protect, restore, and maintain water quality. In addition, the MOU clarifies the process for DEQ and its commission to work with ODF and this board to make making water quality rules and setting voluntary measures, measure options, and commits both agencies to ensure ODF's data and analysis are used to strengthen TMDLs. Both agencies have worked closely with their respective board and commission chairs and liaisons, leading to agency directors plan for signing this updated MOU later this year or early next. Now I'm going to talk about seeds to trees. The J. Schroeder Seed Orchard is winding down the 2021 harvest with over 5,000 bushels of Douglas fir and an expected 600 bushels of Western hemlock. So what does it really mean? Douglas fir alone should produce about 1,500 pounds of seed or 37 million seedings. The hemlock is expected to produce 180 pounds or 36 million seedings. This is really about the future of our trees, the future of Oregon's forests. ODF was also recently awarded just under $1 million from the American Forest, which is the oldest national conservation nonprofit in the United States, to plant 2 million trees on the San Ym State Forest in areas impacted by the Labor Day fires. This is the largest American Forest, this largest grant that American Forest has awarded and will help ODF restore working forests and to implement other restoration activities across state forests to benefit all Oregonians. Lastly, this afternoon, the board has a workshop focused on the department's draft climate change and carbon plan. While I was not involved in the development of much of this body of work, given the timing of my arrival, I'm extremely proud of the results being shared with you today. I have observed collaboration on this work through public and stakeholder engagements and throughout the executive team. I see the ownership by the executive team members as they've engaged. Danny and John have provided consistent, steady leadership through key transitions, and I have been responsive, and they have been responsive to the feedback that's been provided. I look forward to this afternoon's workshop as well as the rest of the morning. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I've got a couple of comments. Just want to first mention, you know, how frustrating it is that we are having to meet virtually, but I am always looking for the silver lining, and at least none of us have to wear masks today, and we can see each other's faces, so not so bad. So first, I would like to acknowledge as well the job that's been done by our firefighters this summer. I got to visit the Elbow Creek Fire in Northeast Oregon earlier this summer, and the coordination and logistics that I got to witness that are involved are really mind-boggling. And when you add in the challenges of both managing COVID and the supply chain shortages that we have been experiencing, you know, throughout our economy, and that also affects these firefighting operations, I really was sort of left shaking my head in awe at what they were pulling off. So you know, this year in terms of fire, we are not out of the woods yet, obviously, but the cooler August weather and the recent relative lack of thunderstorms has left us, I think, in way better shape than any of us would have predicted in late July. That said, we are really just lucky so far. And there can be really no denying at this point of our new climate reality. This summer could have been so much worse, and hopefully we won't see it turn that way before we're done with fire season. But perhaps the silver lining in all of that is that now, for the first time, most everyone finally agrees that we need to address climate change, although we will certainly have different opinions on how to do that, and we'll hear a lot about that today, I'm sure. But just that level of agreement, that is progress. So I look forward to our workshop this afternoon on the Climate Change and Carbon Plan, and I will have some more comments to share to help kick off that conversation later today. Other board members, do we have comments here at this point in our meeting?
Chair Kelly, this is Board Member McComb. I just want to follow up on your comments briefly and say that in an uncharacteristic manner for me, I'm optimistic about the approach that could be taken to resolve the climate change issues, because I see climate change as a problem that will take each one of us giving an effort to try to resolve it. And it doesn't matter what our values are for forests. It could be economic, it could be ecological, it could be social, it could be any value, but all of those values are in jeopardy in the face of climate change. And so if people with a variety of values associated with forests can come together and recognize that it's going to take everybody to try to solve this problem by reducing greenhouse gas emissions and everything we do, including managing forests, by sequestering carbon in trees that admittedly can grow for a very long time, and by storing that carbon both in living and dead wood in the forest as well as in long-lived wood products. And if we can all come together and agree on how best to do that, we can get our arms around this climate problem. But it's going to take each and every one of us to do it, just as it's taken each and every one of us to get our arms around the pandemic. The two are not unlike one another, except that we don't have a vaccine for climate change. We do for the pandemic. So the best we can hope for with the climate change problem is to not let it get worse. And it's going to take every one of us to work together to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Other board member comments? Not hearing any, we will then move on to the public testimony process. Thank you for those who have signed up to provide testimony to the board today. We ask that everyone in the Zoom queue to not exceed their allotted time of 3 minutes. I ask that before you start, that you state your full name, the agenda item that you are commenting on, and any associated affiliation, if representing a group or organization. A timer will be provided to track your time, and each commenter will be called on by the board administrator. With limited time available, anyone who exceeds their time will be prompted to provide a closing statement. So, are we ready to engage with public comment?
Hello, Board Kelly. This is your board administrator, Hillary Olivos-Rood. I just need to do one more quick confirmation, if you all don't mind. One moment.
Okay.
To those in the queue, I am putting this request out to a phone number, 727-432 begins the first six numbers. Could you confirm who that may be?
Hello.
Hello, this is...
Hello, this is Sandra Brock, the 727 number.
Okay, thank you very much for confirming. good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. So for today, to ensure we stay on track, I'm going to list a set of names in an order and call on each of you to begin your testimony. You will be unmuted for your comment portion and muted upon conclusion. When you begin, a timer will be displayed for a duration of 3 minutes. When you see the timer run out, we do ask that you wrap up for your final comments. So the order that will be happening today will be beginning with Mr. Steen. It will move to Ms. Braylor, Ms. Travers, Ms. Arkin, Mr. Byers, Mr. Barnes, and it would move to Mr. Brownscombe and finalize with Ms. Kropp. So everyone keep track of your order, and I'll present your screen timer here. One moment. Mr. Steen, please proceed.
Hello, I am Professor Trigby Steen. My background involves several advanced degrees, including a PhD from Yale. I've spent over 45 years teaching courses in forest ecology and the principle of sustainability at Portland State. I've done region-wide documentation of forest management. The twin crises of climate change and drinking water for coastal cities scream out for change. The solution for both is fundamentally the same: growing forests for at least 80 years. I applaud both Governor Brown and the Oregon Department of Forestry for their focus on mitigating the urgent crises created by the destructive impacts of our changing climate. A key solution involves the capacity of Oregon's forest to be a major global contributor to the removal and long-term storage of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. This has been documented in scientific publications and acknowledged in the Oregon Department of Forestry draft climate change and carbon plan. For ODF and private lands in Oregon, forests 80 or more years old provide the best method for sequestering carbon dioxide. The ODF must begin to lead by example, and the Board of Forestry badly needs to upgrade the forest practice administrative rules so that climate change and the drinking water crises are addressed. Our older forests provide a more even and reliable flow of quality drinking water. For forest cities, for coastal cities, summer flows of water from watersheds covered by short rotation plantations are becoming inadequate to support their summer tourist-based economies. Older forests would provide critically needed summer flows. At a minimum, the Board of Forestry needs to provide more protection for drinking water quality by requiring substantially wider buffers along all components of a watershed that supply drinking water, including the parts that only flow for part of the year. Ideally, entire drinking watersheds need to be covered by forests over 100 years old so that the water storing capacities of older forest ecosystems can provide critically needed higher summer flows and water quality. Forests older than 30 years have many additional significant benefits. They better protect biodiversity, protect the fundamental soil resource. They're more fire resistant, especially when not conifer monocultures. They retain significant economic value after a fire, unlike trees and plantations younger than 25 years. Older forests provide major socioeconomic benefits. Finally, because of all of these reasons, older forests best support the principle of greatest permanent value. Thank you for your attention and doing the needed actions.
Thank you. Next up, Ms. Braylor.
Good morning, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board. We have a few slides that I wanted to share with you, so is it okay if I go ahead and share my screen now? Hillary, it looks like I lost capability to do so. Great, thank you. Can everyone see the slide with the herbicide application in state forests?
Yes.
Thank you. And I'll turn my video off while I present. For the record, my name is Grace Brayler, and I'm the Oregon Climate Action Plan and Policy Manager for Beyond Toxics, a statewide environmental justice organization with offices in both Lane and Jackson counties. I'll be followed by our water quality intern, Jenna Travers, as well as our executive director, Lisa Arkin. While we're still compiling our findings to submit to the board in writing, we wanted to share with you our main takeaways from a preliminary set of data we obtained from the FERNS, or Forest Activity Electronic Notification and Reporting System, and ultimately call for a thorough, immediate evaluation of the full range of impacts of aerial herbicide application in state forests on drinking water quality, essential fish habitat, and community health and well-being. So the data that I'll share details herbicide applications on state forest lands from January 1st, 2020 through August 30th, 2021. This first chart shows the number of sprays per district since 2020. Most sprays occurred in the Western Lane District, followed by Astoria and Forest Grove. Of the total 327 sprays, 215 were ground sprays, while 111 were aerial sprays. Aerial herbicide sprays are 34% of all sprays in the past 20 months. However, previous analysis Beyond Toxics completed using FERNS data as well showed that aerial spraying could be as much as 70% of all herbicide sprays in a state forest district. Of the 327, or 69.4% of tank mixes sprayed in state forests contain three or more active ingredients. Typically, multiple adjuvants are also added to the tank mixes to alter the characteristics or increase the effectiveness and potency of an herbicide formulation. In 175 of the total 327 tank mixes, four or five adjuvants were added. This is 54% of the total used multiple adjuvants. These create chemical mixtures of active ingredients and adjuvants that haven't been researched for their synergistic or additive effects in the environment or in drinking water quality. In any single tank mix, there could be 7 to 8 hazardous chemicals present, possibly increasing the overall toxicity being introduced into the environment and making its way into streams that support fish and provide drinking water to thousands of Oregonians. And while these chemicals have been tested separately, most have not been tested in combination with one another. This indicates that the true impacts are unknown and require more research. So next, I'm going to pass to Jenna, who will pick up where I left off. And I'm seeing in the chat that I think there were a problem with my slides, so I will try and fix that. My apologies.
Thank you. Ms. Travers?
Yes, thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Jenna Travers, and I am a water quality intern with Beyond Toxics. I'm going to pick up where Grace Raylor left off. So many of the chemicals used by ODF in their sprays can lead to harmful symptoms when people are exposed to them, including rashes, asthma attacks, vomiting, and nosebleeds. There have been several instances where poorly timed spraying and high winds have led to sickened communities in Oregon. Some active ingredients are also more serious, and so I'll be going into those a little more in detail based on the graph shown on the screen. So glyphosate was used in 69.4% of the tank mixes applied to state forests since January 1st, 2020, and there have been concerns about glyphosate being a carcinogen. Hexazinone was present in 15% of the tank mixtures applied to state forests over the past 20 months, and it is a particularly hazardous restricted use pesticide that can cause eye damage and harm aquatic species. Washington State actually banned hexazinone in forestry practices on all forest lands in the state due to its toxicity in water. I am from a coastal community where we rely on rivers and streams not only for drinking water, but also for salmon and other fish populations. So sprays involving hexazinone and other chemicals are very concerning. Next, flupyrulid is a highly persistent chemical in the environment, meaning that it doesn't break down easily. This chemical was used in 23.5% of tank mixes. And as an example of its extreme persistence, clopyralid has been found in compost facilities, getting there through clopyralid-laced manure and then damaging home gardens at concentrations of only 3 parts per billion. This took place in Portland just last year. Finally, and alarmingly, odor masks were added to 14.1% of tank mixes applied since January 2020 in order to inhibit Oregonians from sensing the chemical concoctions being applied in their forests. This would be concerning for people picnicking, hiking, and camping in our state forests who do not realize they are inhaling dangerous toxins. So based on some of the extreme health risks that come with intaking pesticides, what is especially as concerning is the proximity of aerial herbicide applications to drinking water intakes. Please, could you go to the next slide, if possible? So this map shows the locations of aerial sprays that occurred from 2015 to 2018, which are in red. Tillamook State Forest land, shown in brown, overlap with the areas designated as drinking watersheds by the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and Oregon Health Authority, which are shown in pink. As you can see, several aerial sprays occurred where state forest lands overlapped with these protected drinking watersheds, which provide drinking water for thousands of Oregonians. This is very concerning as far as public health goes. Next, Lisa will explain the concerns expand on the concerns of many Oregonians and share recommendations for addressing them. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Up next, Ms. Arkin.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Grace and Jenna. Good morning, Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board. For the record, my name is Lisa Arkin. I'm the Executive Director of Beyond Toxics. We and many other Oregonians are deeply concerned about the long-lasting impacts of aerial spray on our drinking water quality. Management plans being developed by the Department of Forestry do not adequately prioritize safe drinking water. They fail to adequately recognize the role that forestry practices, like aerial spray, can play in threatening our water supplies and in exacerbating climate change. Forest management plans do not underscore the urgency many Oregonians feel as we experience severe drought, plus greater levels of pollution in waters of the state that are critical to health and sustenance for people and wildlife alike. Solving our water and forestry problems requires more urgency and greater corrective action than appears in the department's efforts. We must protect our watersheds. Thus, we are requesting that an immediate 2-year moratorium be placed on aerial pesticide sprays in watersheds on state forest lands while ODF conducts a study to map drinking water sources and to perform an independent analysis of water quality. Forest practices in state forests are harming our water supplies and our communities. Drinking water sources are particularly threatened due to clear cutting and pesticide application. We should remember that ODF's unsustainable logging policies and practices on the coast even lost the state over $1 million in federal grant funding. Access to safe, reliable water is a basic human right. It is necessary for viable communities and for our future generations. Further, if we protect our watersheds, we get more than safe water resources. We also get healthy forests, fish and wildlife habitat, carbon storage, a stronger economy, and ecologically appropriate forest practices. Again, we ask the board place a moratorium on aerial pesticide sprays in watersheds until such time that the board can establish a blue ribbon panel of scientists, sustainable forestry management experts, and community members to study the impacts of aerial spray to communities and the environment. In closing, I wish to say that only when informed by a comprehensive analysis will ODF be able to chart a better path forward for our drinking water, our fish habitats, and our community health and well-being. We will follow up with the board to provide our data and findings in more detail. We're sorry if the bottom of the slide wasn't visible to you, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have at this time. Thank you for considering this urgent request.
Thank you. Up next, we would like Mr. Byers to join us.
Good morning. I'm Ron Byers, representing North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection, a grassroots organization with over 700 members on the Oregon coast. Our group wants me to talk to you today about the water that flows through the forests you manage. In many cases, it supplies our communities and becomes our drinking water. We can see there is less rainfall during our summer months of high demand, and we know that water usage has grown significantly as people flock to the beaches. Now we are beginning to see evidence of water shortages as trees brown and communities face the future need to ration. We are watching Southern Oregon, and our water concerns are growing. I know, is this really Oregon? Forest practices have a major impact on our water supplies. We know from experience that logging practices, especially on steep slopes, do create turbidity problems and costs for downstream water users. Clear cuts diminish a forest's ability to supply water, especially during summer months. Given the amount of pesticides being applied after logging these days, we do not trust that harmful chemicals aren't finding their way into our water sources, affecting some people and animals more than others. We are asking that you prioritize water supplies and safe drinking water as you finalize ODF goals. Water is mentioned twice among 20 goals, but we can't tell if it is more important than timber sales in our watersheds. What is the value of an area's drinking water, especially with drier times on the way? Many of us are saying that water from our watersheds is the most important goal we can have, even more important than timber revenue. The necessity of clean, reliable water is that essential to a town and its area residents, especially as it gets harder to come by. This is not to say that timber harvests can't happen in our state forests, but they have to occur around the need to protect water to communities first and foremost. We have to meaningfully protect our watersheds, then determine timber production. We hope your finalized goals will reflect this and that water, especially drinking water, becomes one of your top priorities. We'd like to see a water goal reflected in each of the plans you are considering as the agency moves forward. It's hard to imagine a more permanent and higher value than water. Please stress forest water management in your mission and let us join you in being the stewards of our water supplies. We are available to help you in whatever ways we can because, well, frankly, we need the water. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beyer. Up next, Mr. Barnes.
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Thank you.
All right. Chair Kelly, State Forester Hirsch, and members of the board, for the record, my name is Seth Barnes, and I'm the Director of Forest Policy at Oregon Forest and Industries Council. This has been a year of change. In passing a historic bill, Senate Bill 1602 last year, the legislature and the governor signed into law a whole host of changes that have been implemented throughout this year on forest lands in Oregon. Foresters, landowners, and the department staff have been working diligently to ensure good implementation of those new protection measures. As a reminder, these expanded protections include increased buffer widths, basal area, and distribution on all salmon, steelhead, and bull trout streams in the Siskiyou Geo-region. They include increased buffer widths and protections for all helicopter herbicide applications in the vicinity of any flowing water, fish streams, drinking water intakes, and homes and schools, and this includes on state forests. From conversations I've had with my members, I get a strong sense that folks in the field are diligently working together to understand and implement these expanded protections, even during fluctuating COVID requirements and a busy fire season. I express our appreciation to the folks at ODF who continue to work every day in this effort, answering the phone when there's questions, developing trainings, and continuing to meet in the field when necessary. Responsible and legal use of herbicide is critical to the survival of young trees, forests, and promotes healthy forest growth. They are used very sparingly in forestry, I remind you, at only 2 to 3 times every 40 to 60 years to help young trees get established and outcompete fast-growing, often invasive species, such as blackberry and Scotch broom. They're actually important in establishing carbon sequestration out in the forest and continuing that process. But we're not done. The Private Forest Division has been working hard to prepare the state, the state-of-the-art, one-of-a-kind, real-time notification system that's set for launch this coming December. As landowners, we once again appreciate all of the hard work that has gone into preparing this system. There's no other like it in the nation. No other state offers anything like this, and that includes all of this suite of protections. There's no blueprint to copy or follow here. This is truly one of a kind. These new rules apply to all non-federal lands in the state, including private and state forest lands. Thanks for allowing this opportunity to comment this morning. We appreciate the hard work that's going into implementing these state-of-the-art rules. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next, Mr. Brownscombe.
Thank you. Board Chair Kelly and members of the board and State Forester Hirsch, my name is Brett Brownscombe. I represent the Wild Salmon Center based in Portland, Oregon, with programs and staff around the Pacific Rim. And I appreciate all the comments to date. I wanted to touch on the State Forest Division and the State Forest Program in particular, recognizing that the board's work and roles are much broader than that. I wanted to reflect on this for a reason, though, because it eventually syncs up to the main topic of the day around carbon and climate change. At a recent Forest Trust Land Advisory Committee meeting, the most recent meeting, there was testimony that all there and listening were able to hear around carbon levels haven't reached atmospheric quantities that are extreme enough to deter plant growth. So therefore, what's the problem? And then other comments from commissioners around murrelets and spotted owls aren't going to feed your families. And it really felt like the kind of pandering to extremes and fear that are reminiscent of today's politics, unfortunately. And it pretended in many ways that the Habitat Conservation Plan and the Forest Management Plan that the department is working on are not about balance or opportunity, but rather overreach and loss. And it pretends that the incidental take permit that accompanies a habitat conservation plan somehow wouldn't be good in providing Endangered Species Act assurances for timber harvest and better protections for long-term harvests. So it was, unfortunately for our organization and others interested in the conservation community, a reminder that there's an antiquated line of fear-based thinking out there that ideally the board can stay above and that the department and all of you fortunately need to work in. And in finding balance, it was a reminder of another antiquated issue, which is fundamental to state forest business. That is the business model of the State Forest Division, which is tied uniformly to a one-legged stool of revenue from timber harvests. And we believe that this needs to be diversified and that as you work on the HCP and the FMP, that the board and department should keep the business model in mind. And that really this is not about loss or overreach. There is room for balance in the HCP and the FMP that includes timber harvest and especially includes the ability of the department to model forestry and different examples of forestry that are leading in the nation and the world. And that it's a true opportunity to benefit those who historically have not been served well by the single or unilateral approach to reliance on revenue or timber harvest revenue as the means of achieving broad public values on state public lands. And so that includes critters and species that the Wild Salmon Center cares about. Thank you. Yeah, I'll wrap right here. That includes the critters, but it also includes people, whether they be concerned about drinking water or underserved and underrepresented people who have been using state forests more, but not necessarily tied to any revenue line that serves their interests. So thank you as you move forward through the climate discussion today for keeping the broad picture, including the state forest business model in mind. It truly is important to enabling opportunities for everyone on state forest lands. Thank you.
Thank you. Up last is Ms. Kropp.
Hi, thank you so much for your time today. For the record, my name is Samantha Kropp, and I'm the Coalition Coordinator with the Forest Waters Coalition. And I'd like to focus my comments on ODF's ongoing operations as illustrated in both the recent annual operating plans and the salvage logging proposals created after last year's fires. While the department and board are drafting sound goals to turn our state's forest management practices into climate solutions, ongoing forest practices on state lands do reflect a management direction that emphasizes short rotation clear cutting and monoculture timber plantations. These practices have been well documented to deplete long-term forest carbon stores, degrade the value of forest lands, and put state forests and their resources at greater risk as the climate change unfolds. Specifically, these practices reduce water supplies across the landscape, water availability, and we also know that industrial timber practices increase fire insecurity and fire severity on the landscape. Where recent science conducted in the Holiday Farm fire footprint after the 2020 fires found that these industrial timber plantations burned hotter than unlogged lands. Additionally, since the fires of last year, ODF has proposed a significant amount of post-fire clear-cut logging in areas that are beloved by mountain bikers, horseback riders, including the Monument Peak Horse Camp in the Niagara area. Much of the ODF managed forest burned in last year's fires is on quite steep terrain with significant potential for erosion. And there's significant concerns for water quality as all of this post-fire logging unfolds on the landscape. Salvage logging does make a bad situation worse in regard to sensitive soils and is certainly concerning for drinking water and weaken soil stability. I did want to also note on the topic of the MOU with Memorandum of Understanding with the Department of Environmental Quality. As others who've spoken before me have pointed out, Oregon's forest practices have some of the weakest protections in the state for our waterways. In fact, Oregon has been denied millions of dollars in federal funding from the EPA because of our state's lack of compliance and insufficiency at protecting streams and landslide-prone areas from the impacts of industrial logging. As others have also pointed out, ODF currently manages a significant amount of land and municipal drinking water supplies. And many of these communities are already suffering across Oregon from water issues, including exorbitant costs for new water treatment facilities and even considering having to change out their water sources due to degradation over time. So as the Oregon Department of Forestry and the board work with the Department of Environmental Quality to bring our waterways into federal compliance, please do place a special focus on community drinking water supplies. Industrial forest practices that are currently authorized by the current annual operating plans and also by the post-fire logging proposals at play will increase water treatment costs for our communities and harm our communities' drinking water supplies in the long term. With the necessary work underway, just please consider an immediate moratorium on clear cutting and pesticide spraying and community drinking water supplies. And I'll just finish up by saying there are thankfully excellent examples of better forest management practices out there and climate smart forest management practices. And do so appreciate the work of the board and the department in advancing these. And we hope that the annual operating plans and the actions on the ground can reflect the lofty climate goals that are being formulated now. Thank you.
Testimony providers, you're welcome to stay in the Zoom meeting. However, we ask that you remain muted and disengage your video for the remainder of the item, unless called upon. Thank you so much. Chair Kelly and the members of the board, this concludes our public testimony portion of item one.
Okay, thank you, Hillary, and thank you to all of you who provided testimony this morning.